let's blaze our own lane here. We don't need to fit into this picture perfect little tiny box because everyone can. You know, if we all tried to do that, we wouldn't be exceptional at our jobs. What has helped me is like just being me throughout this. And I encourage everyone to do it because you bring different things to the table that if you're just trying to fit into the box, you're just another one in the box.
This is Sweat the Details, a collaboration with Under Armour and iHeartRadio, a sports and training podcast made for women by women that puts our success and challenges at the front and center. I'm Monica Jones. I'm a fitness coach, boxer, business owner, and UA athlete.
And I'm Meg Boggs. I'm a powerlifter, author, body positivity advocate, and mother. Every episode, Monica and I will talk to athletes, trainers, and experts and learn more about how the body and mind work together in training and competition.
Fit fam, today we're getting real about the world of sports journalism with CBS soccer reporter Jenny Chu. Before becoming a journalist, Jenny was a member of the Mexican national soccer team and a D1 soccer player at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
She is so incredible and has had an amazing career, both as an athlete and a broadcast journalist, reporting from the sidelines. Jenny grew up in a multicultural household with Chinese and Mexican parents, and today she is committed to uplifting diverse voices in sports and giving a platform to athletes that we rarely ever hear from.
That's right, Meg. And the field of sports news and media has traditionally been dominated by white men. So for a woman of color, it can be really tough to break in and make a name for yourself. Jenny is sharing her journey and career path with us and hopes it inspires more women to pursue a career in sports journalism and bring with them their unique and much needed perspectives.
She really is, you know, paving the way for so many women who have maybe never even thought that it was possible to not only have a career in sports journalism as a woman, but also as a woman of color. I feel like in the rare instance that we see women represented in sports media, it's actually even rarer that we see women of color. It's absolutely unacceptable. And it's about time that women like Jenny are given these opportunities because hopefully now just by her presence in sports media, more and more women will see the possibilities, you know, to pursue their dreams. And it's just, it's inspiring.
Yeah, it's one thing to speak on something that you believe in, that you really want to see and to embody it. But when you hear somebody go hard and really say it with their chest, that for me is like, oh, she's not afraid to literally say that. I feel more comfortable wanting that and wanting to be a part of it because it's not timid. It's just very certain. And I appreciate her for her presence.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just excited to get this conversation out there.
Yes, ma'am. Are you ready for our interview with Jenny Chu, Meg?
Yep, let's go.
All right, welcome back, fam. We're so excited to have Jenny Chu on the show. She is a sports journalist focused on soccer at CBS Sports. Jenny, thank you so much for coming on with us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So I'll jump right into it. You're a sports journalist at CBS Sports, covering all things soccer. Can you tell us about your role in your day-to-day work?
Yeah, so anything that pertains to soccer, I am like all-inclusive. So that includes NWSL, Champions League, Europa League. We just acquired Serie A, and we're getting more and more rights as we go along. So we're kind of new to the soccer space, but we're starting to get a bunch of rights. And I basically do anything that we have the rights to. I'm mostly an on-field reporter, and I'm starting to make my rounds in a different way as well. I do Twitch streams. I write sometimes. I just try to do it all in the soccer space.
Well, that's exciting. That sounds fun. Like being like on-field. Yeah.
There's definitely passion there.
So before you were a journalist, so you actually played soccer competitively, what role did sports, you know, play in your life growing up, you know, especially soccer?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I started playing all sports and then I kind of narrowed down into soccer and swimming and then eventually picked soccer. But it was everything. I mean, I don't remember a time when that wasn't the most important thing in my life, which, you know, there's potential for that to be a bad thing, but after college, I knew that that was the one thing that I knew about my career or what I wanted to do in my career was to be in the soccer space. Not sure exactly what, but that's what I wanted to do.
Oh, very cool.
I'm just so excited to be having this conversation.
I know.
Like, yeah, I mean, it's so cool. I played soccer when I was younger, and it's just amazing what you can do if you're agile and you're really about it. So, Jenny, you played with both teams, USA and Mexico. But ultimately, you decided to stay with the Mexican team. Can you tell us more about your international soccer career? Like, how did you choose the team you would represent in the international stage?
Yeah, I think it's all complicated. You know, at a certain age, I was pulled in, I think I was 12 years old, pulled into my first Mexican national team camp. And at that point, no one else was my age. Everyone was like at the under 20s. So they are 19 years old. They're so much older. And it was almost like, you're going to take the torch one day. So we're just going to keep on bringing you into camps, even though you're not going to play in a tournament for many years. So I kept getting called in, and it was a great experience. And it, you know, really connected me with my Mexican side. Growing up on the border, I'm kind of split. And then the US side, I did the same thing that all soccer players in our age group. And, you know, you do the state team, the regional team. I mean, you said you played, so you probably know like the normal route that everybody goes through. And then I eventually made the national pool.
I dreamed of that route. But it sounds like, you know, rather than you choosing, you were the chosen one. And that's really dope.
That is.
I haven't thought about it like that. But yeah, I think, you know, when that all happens, it's such a cool experience to get to experience both sides, because we're the same. We are young women, you know, at the same age, and the experience is completely different on both national teams. I think the reason, or a huge reason as to why I am where I am in my career, was due to those experiences that I had as a player.
Very interesting. So you got to experience like both. That's really cool.
Yeah.
So you're from El Paso, Texas, not too far from me. How was growing up in a border town? Did growing up there influence your passion for Mexican soccer?
100%. Growing up in a border town, I think, is played so much of a role into my whole career and the fact that I am so soccer heavy. Texas is known for being like a football state, but as you would know from Texas, but yeah. El Paso is not. El Paso is like soccer, 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 which is just like the culture I grew up around was like soccer was the most important thing. And obviously like being on the border, you know, my mom lived in Mexico for like the majority of my life when I was a kid. And splitting that is why I'm so passionate about like Hispanic, Latino stories, because I relate to them. And why I played with the Mexican national team was like so natural because my mom lived there. You know, we grew up halfway there, halfway here. So the split makes so much sense when you're born in a border town.
I love that.
I know exactly what you're talking about though, because I grew up in South Texas. So
yeah,
I grew up in a town full of Latinos.
But the experience is very different than being in Dallas. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Once I moved in like eighth grade, and it was so interesting because I didn't speak much Spanish growing up. So I was considered like the white Mexican. Mm-hmm. And then I moved and suddenly I was like just this Mexican. Yeah. Like, that's all anybody saw. And I was
that's now your identity. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just interesting that move. So I completely understand. But even now, I feel like people don't even know that I'm 100% Mexican. Like, people just assume that I'm white.
Oh, I'm just learning this
today.
My
last name is Boggs.
Yeah.
Because I married a white man and then I have his last name. So it's like, and I'm a light skin type Mexican, you know? So people just assume. And I'm like, no, I'm actually Mexican.
I didn't know that either.
People always think that I'm just black or that I'm black and white and not black and Filipino.
You're black and Filipino?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, that's beautiful.
Yeah. So
we're like all like.
Oh my God.
We're
a melting pot.
Yeah. Oh, just that's a mixture of everybody. Yes. Sweat the Details is female produced and we are diverse AF. So
I know.
That's beautiful. Like what? Guys, we should have talked about that.
We manifested this conversation. Yeah.
But like, see, someone at Under Armour, someone at iHeartRadio decided to give you guys voices in this and decide.
Yes.
Yes.
That doesn't always happen. We determine the narratives.
Yeah, man.
Cool. Why did you, you know, ultimately leave the soccer field to become a sports journalist? What was that transition like?
I had a really bad injury before the 12 World Cup. Like that year is an overtraining thing apparently, but I had a back injury with like 3 bulging discs, like my whole spine was messed up. And I didn't know how to rest, which is something that I now think that we have the resources to tell people, like, when you're an athlete, you need to rest some, you need to recover, and these things matter. In the community that I was in, that's not something that my parents ever told me. Like, it was go, go, go. You play on 3-4 different teams. You practice as much as you can so that you go and you get these experiences. And I never stopped. You know, I did play on 3-4 different teams every weekend. And I didn't know that that was wrong. So I had a back injury, and then that kind of was like the demise of my career, because for someone that, you know, the Mexican national team was trying to build the team around and trying to make captain and trying to have all these grand ideas for, I could no longer perform to that because I was always injured. I couldn't do this. I would cry in the middle of training sessions because I was like, something's wrong. Like, something's very wrong. When we finally figure out like what it is, which I feel sad that I couldn't figure it out earlier, you know, that I didn't have the resources to know what it was. And maybe my career would have been different. I took a year off soccer and eventually, I mean, I was still committed to UNC. I luckily went in after my year off. And that completely changes the dynamic of everything. From someone that was like on top of the world and like the best player in every room I walked in to I am the bottom of the bottom underneath that. So that kind of changed my experience at UNC. And then the realization that I wasn't going to go pro. Like I was never going to be the player that I was supposed to be after that injury. And yeah, the transition was hard. I think everyone has that like difficult moment. I'm not sure if you guys can talk about that moment when you're like, oh, what I thought I was going to be, I'm not going to be. Now what?
Yes.
Yeah. I feel that.
like we feel it. We're like, I'm like,
I know I could talk about that all day.
Right? You know? I'm like, wait, what's the episode about? Seriously. How has your experience as a competitive soccer player informed your journalism practice?
I think it's everything. And as a reporter, I have been in those shoes. So when I talk to players, when I talk to coaches, I've been, you know, in that the tunnel. I've been in the locker rooms. I understand the film sessions that they have just been in and the amount of hours it takes outside of the field, the nutritional aspects, like all of those things, I've done it. I've been away from my house for 3 months at a time to prepare for a World Cup and then go to one and not see your family in that entire space of time, which is hard for someone who hasn't experienced any of that to really empathize with, to really be like, I know what they're probably going through mentally right now because they haven't done it. And, you know, that's not a knock on anyone who hasn't like played at a high level and is a reporter. It's just the fact that I think being able to empathize with it is so important. And being able to say, I can put myself in your shoes. And even if you haven't done it, just to kind of like put yourself in their shoes and be like, I understand why all of this is in the media right now, that you're struggling and you're not having a good time. And well, no duh, you haven't seen your family in 3 months and you just had a baby. And you know, like there's so much that goes into it that people don't think about off the field that if you were an athlete, you have to think about.
That's so true. I guess there's a very big difference between imagining what it could feel like and remembering what it felt like, right? You know, I think of soccer and it's just something that I imagine. What would it be like to be on the field? I have no clue. I've never played soccer, no experience in it. And so what I'm imagining is probably nowhere near what you're remembering. So now when you're going through all of this and you're trying to, you know, decide what is the path I'm going to take next, were there any like sports journalists that inspired you and, you know, made an impact in your career?
I think so. It's important to kind of mention that I didn't mean to get into sports broadcasting. Like I kind of kept falling into it. You know, I graduated with a broadcast journalism degree with the thought of, you know, maybe because I don't know what else I'm good at. I hate science. I hate math. I'm like not great at anything, really.
Listen, and I feel that.
We all that so deeply. Like, okay, I got it. But I had like incredible anxiety being on air that I was like, I know 100% I don't want to take this route. So I went to go play in Australia after my experience at UNC. And while I was there, I met someone that was like producing that needed a Spanish speaker. And I was like, that's me. I speak Spanish and I can do these interviews for you. I did the interviews for them and I felt like so good after the fact. I was like, wait, maybe this is something that I can maybe do, but still not like fully diving into it. Came back to the States, applied for internships in soccer, all of them. I think I applied for, like, to be a mascot as well. Like I was just like, put me back on like, near the soccer field. Just get me near the field. And I finally got an internship with one of the MLS and NWSL teams in Portland as a social media intern. And my first day was their reporter's last day. And then they find out, you know, I have a soccer background. I'm knowledgeable. I have a broadcast journalism degree. Like I click all these boxes that are needed for the reporter position. And they were like, can you just like try to do our post-game interviews? Because we need someone. And that's how it happened. And this is the road I've been on.
Yeah.
Manifested.
It was like a windy road, but you got there.
Yeah. That's why like when people are like, how did you do this? I'm like, everyone's experience is going to be completely different. Like I can tell you mine, but it's not going to be yours because we're all going to have very different roads.
Yours is yours. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious, was there anyone that you kind of looked up to or that you noticed that was like kind of gave you that inspiration?
Yeah. I think what's hard is like something that we touch on a lot is the lack of diversity in mm-hmm. in on camera. So for me to be like, I want to be like that person, I lacked that because no one looked like me in the soccer space that like was exactly what I wanted to be one day. So no, I can't really point to someone and be like, that's exactly what I wanted to do. Now I do. You know, Kate Abdo is a coworker of mine. She works on our show. I admire her to the depths of this universe. But she's also someone who comes from like similar backgrounds and like has those aspects that I see in her, mm-hmm. I see in myself. But it's harder when all of the people that are on television that are in those roles look the same. And you're right. Like, no, that's not even a possibility for me. Why would I even look that way? So.
Oh, that makes total sense. And honestly, I think that it's great when you can find someone that you can relate to or that inspires you. But it is equally, if not greater, when you can do that for yourself and you can pay it forward.
Now you're doing it for other people.
Yeah, you pay it forward, yeah. So you've been traveling a lot thanks to your current job, including Europe and Latin America, to cover major events like the World Cup qualifiers and the Champions League. Could you tell us more about your preparation for these events and how you get ready to cover international championships?
Ooh, yeah, it's different. It's different because when it's the CONCACAF, which is the World Cup qualifiers I'm currently covering, next week I'll be on the road for that as well. It's something that I'm very familiar with. Like the style of play in CONCACAF is what I grew up on. You know, I watched USA-Mexico every chance I got when it was happening in my upbringing. But the Champions League is not something that I got on my television growing up. Like that's just the reality of where I grew up, our socioeconomic status, and we didn't have those channels. And, you know, it was harder to access on television than it is now. So that's a little more alien to me. This whole Champions League thing that I'm covering, it's harder. So that preparation is completely different because I'm starting from zero. You have to, you know, go through the teams. And luckily we have, you know, people that help us with some of the resources, but it's a lot of watching games that you never thought you could get. You never thought you would watch in these like tiny stadiums somewhere. But the CONCACAF stuff is more comfortable for me because it's something that I grew up on. And I understand the storylines. I've watched them my whole life. I played with Mexico in the US and I understand why they matter. You know, these stories and these players I've grown up watching my whole life. But it's a lot of time, a lot of watching soccer, a lot of breaking it down, a lot of reading articles, watching different analysts that have more of an expertise in the European game when I do Champions League, like Sky Sports and BBC, and seeing what they have because there's already storylines and narratives there.
That's so cool. I mean, it's hours, hours of research.
I know, I can imagine. But it has to be fun, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, Jenny, as a bilingual journalist, you've really advocated for having Spanish-speaking players featured in English media. Could you tell us more about this aspect of your work? What challenges have you faced, you know, trying to make this happen?
So I was the sideline reporter for, you know, a couple teams in MLS. And consistently, the narrative was that we don't want to hear from them because people won't understand. But they're the best players in our league. In MLS, the best players in our league are Spanish-speaking players. So we were consistently having like post-game interviews with players who really had nothing to do with the game's result. You know, they weren't the goal scorer. They weren't the big shot stopper. You know, they weren't the – and it didn't make sense. And so it was an idea – it was like we have Spanish speakers on the talent team. Let us do something around these players. Let us talk to them. And in meetings, I remember going into a meeting and saying like – we should do this story. And them saying, we have done the research and MLS told us that it's not there. The numbers aren't there. You don't need to put resources into this because they're not going to watch it. They're going to watch it in Spanish. They're not going to watch it.
Oh my gosh.
Like how dismissive.
Yeah.
And I pushed and I was like, well, let's just try it. And those pieces of content and those interviews got the best reception because they had never heard from those players. They didn't know those players' stories. They didn't know that one of the players had left their home at 10 years old to pursue being a professional soccer. 10 years old.
Oh my gosh.
And he had been in the league for a couple of years and nobody had done the story because you're told that that's not what matters. And it does. Like the reason why we do what we do is because we want to tell human stories. That's what you guys do on your podcast. You're telling people stories. But you're completely overlooking this whole demographic because you think that it doesn't matter, but it does. You know, one of the biggest things is that the audience that we are, you know, trying to get to watch our sport, to, you know, to listen to our broadcasts and all of those things, they look a certain way. And it's, if you are not showing the things that they care about, it's going to be very obvious.
It sounds like you handled it with grace, though. You handled it with like such a can-do attitude.
We did it anyway.
Yes, yes. Let's go.
Powerful moment in history.
Yeah.
It's the higher ups, you know, that make the decisions that decide to say, you know what, there's no need there. But when you have other people, you know, that are making those decisions that do care about that, you don't have to push for it, you know. And I now work for a company who cares so much about that diversity and that inclusion and making sure that all voices are heard and that we are representative of our audience. And it is so clear when you watch our broadcast, we don't look like other broadcasts. We just don't, because the people up top care about our stories. They care about that aspect. And it's a whole different feeling. Like our whole entire talent crew, if you took all of us, we are all from different backgrounds. We are all from different socioeconomic statuses, different stories, you know, and that matters. It matters.
It's amazing.
Because our storytelling is going to be different than the people who have been given voices this entire time. One thing that I always think about is if I give you both three sentences, and then you have to give me a story on it, I would assume that your stories would come out differently. Based upon your life experiences and how you perceive things and your perspectives, right? Mm-hmm. But if you give that same story to someone who has the same exact life and like almost like the same exact upbringing, the same exact everything, the stories aren't going to be different.
And it shapes a very specific narrative.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, it's very intentionally driven in one direction.
And I think that that's why we're trying to make a push for, hey, these voices matter and they've never been given opportunities and they should. Because the players, the audience, look a certain way and you're not answering to them. So I think just being authentically like caring about that, it's different. Like we told a story about this family who's like mixed race and I got to tell the story. I'm Chinese and Mexican. And growing up in a household that is completely different, you know, I told these two players' stories. And the passion that I felt for that, you're not going to get that if you don't understand the complexities of that situation. And, you know, splitting, you know, one of the brothers played on one national team. The other brother played on another national team. I had that same experience where I played on both national teams and I loved both sides so much. And so not having that experience, you might not have cared so much about that story or you might not have fought to have that story told. So, yeah.
Right. Let's go, Jenny. I'm about to make a sign and get one of those horns and just do the most for the rest of this podcast. I freaking adore you. Okay. So what do you think is the role of Latinos in shaping the soccer landscape in the U.S. as players, as fans, and as sports journalists?
My job is to give the voice to the people who haven't been given a voice. So that was really what I wanted to do in my previous role was push for those players. We're going to do a feature on every single one of those players because I had that power at that point to like, okay, this is who I want to do a feature on. Let's go do this. More people need to do that. And I think that we are. I think that we are kind of like having a shift here of like, okay, we understand the need to have a Spanish-speaking reporter that can live translate these interviews. Like that's something that I didn't know I could do and I kind of had to do to give that voice post-game. You know, when you're walking off the field and the goal scorer needs to speak, I have the ability to speak English, Spanish, and to live translate the interview. I didn't know I could do that. So it's really difficult, but it's needed.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think it is, you know, allowing these stories to be told because the fan base is already there. Like it already exists. The players already exist. It is upon the media to tell those stories and to tell them to the audience that cares about those stories. You know, when I would do these stories with the Latin players, that would be disseminated to Colombia, to Peru. And those stories, like they loved that. And that's something that like just the U.S. players wouldn't get that kind of reach. But it is a matter. I think that the other things are already in place. Like the Latino demographic is there in the players. Like if you look at all our players, it's there. If you look at the fan base, it is there. It is just a matter of making sure that the media aspect, our you know, corner of the triangle cares enough to recognize that and to answer to that and to give that voice there.
I love that.
I'm so glad that that's happening. So I want to shift gears a little bit. Many high-profile athletes have suspended press conferences, you know, saying that these interviews affect their mental health. Do you have any thoughts on that? You know, from your experience, how can sports journalists build better relationships with athletes and be mindful of their mental well-being?
Yeah, that's a great question. I can see it because I've been on both sides. You know, I've been on the other side of the microphone when you're like, we just lost and you're asking such a charged question. You want me to throw my coach under the bus? Like, that's ridiculous. It is that aspect of that empathy that I feel like is sometimes lacking of like, she just lost, you know, this grand slam and you're coming at her for her skirt choice today or, you know, something like that, that is just like, put yourself in the athlete's shoes. And I don't think that it would be as like damaging to the athlete if you are coming at it as a human being, as a person of like, you know, this question is not for that, to grab the headlines of like, you know, she got upset and blew up at us in the media, you know, like trying to egg on that kind of response is definitely going to be bad for someone's mental health. But when you're coming at it as like, I just want to hear your side of the story. For me, I want to give people space to speak. Like whatever your message is post-game, like give me what you want to tell the media. Not necessarily me trying to get you to turn on your coach and say, yeah, he should be fired tomorrow. That's definitely not good for anyone's mental health. But just allowing people to shape their own narrative sometimes.
Right. So the approach.
I think so. I don't know. Tell me what you guys think. You know, you hear the same stories I do in the media.
And when I see it, I'm like, oh, it burns me up because they're just so emotionally provocative sometimes with the questions that are being asked or the way that they frame them or the pace at which you're asking questions for someone who's just gone through something that is pretty much traumatic or, you know, something that is extreme. It's such an extreme high and the players have to be so mindful and, you know, almost hide pieces of who they are and like, you know, be careful of what they're expressing because it lives forever in the media and they can easily be canceled immediately for it, you know? But yeah, honestly, when I see a woman interviewing, I'm like, yeah, like that's something, right? It's something that I just never even thought was possible until I started seeing women and women of color in your role.
Exactly. You didn't before.
Something I always feel like I notice is that all women, especially women of color, are treated so differently in the media when it comes to like their reaction to loss or their reaction to something very emotional.
Serena.
Whereas like men are, yeah, where men are just like, oh, well, it's just, you know, that's the passion. And with women, it's never that. It's like, you can't show any emotion. You can't be passionate. That's what I've noticed. That's always kind of been difficult for me. And then the mental health thing, just like, no wonder why women feel like they can't, you know, be authentically themselves and express themselves and answer questions in an honest way, or else they're just, you know, crucified. And it just, that's always just really bothering.
But that's our role, you know, in the media aspect. We're almost like the lens through which people see and consume it and perceive exactly what you described, you know, the difference between the men and the women in their reactions. The media gets to decide how they cover that, and how they cover that is typically echoed. So when you have people who are not women of color, and they are tearing down, you know, certain women of color consistently, and they're not being stopped, that needs to be brought to light. And you have to have people in power and people that are making those headlines and writing those articles and talking about it to be able to empathize. And sometimes you just can't if you haven't experienced it, or you don't know what that demographic is like, or you don't care to know.
Right.
And you just want to villainize and villainize and villainize because you don't understand that you are like subconsciously villainizing these people. I don't know. I think that that's why we need so much diversity in us, because our media kind of shapes how people perceive things, especially in sports.
Well, if you are looking for some facts, I got some for you.
Please.
All right, you ready for this?
Let's go.
According to the 2018 Associated Press Sports Editors Racial and Gender Report Card, there were 75 media outlets evaluated. Only 10% of sports editors and 11.5% of sports reporters were women. We didn't even break into the 20% and up. The study also found that only 17.9% of sports reporters were people of color. So, Jenny, how was your experience breaking into such a white, male-dominated field?
Whew.
How'd you get up in there?
Whew. Those numbers are difficult.
Dismal.
That is difficult to hear. But we know it. You know, I think the more that we shine a light on it, it's like, you know, some people were tweeting the other day about, you know, this huge broadcast was all women. And I'm telling you, when I saw that, I put my alarm clock on, I put it on my calendar, and I was so excited to watch it. And yes. I turned it on, and it was, I'm so sorry, but it was 5 white women and one Latina woman. And it hurt. It hurt because I was so excited that,
you're,
you know,
excited for that diversity.
I was excited yeah. for that diversity. But it's the same people getting the same opportunities mm-hmm. when that's not what the audience looks like. Like, you're not representing the who you're selling the product to. Right. And I don't say that to call that specific broadcast out, but it really did kind of hurt because we're just continuously going down the wrong path. Like, you have the opportunity to make change and you chose not to. You chose that it didn't matter. And there are plenty of great journalists oh, yes. that you could put in those spots, and you choose not to. It's tough, and it's something that, you know, we talk about often within my place of work because it matters to us to be able to tell those stories. How did I break into it? I found people that cared about that saw that, you know, the things that maybe people didn't see as a positive, as my superpower, as the ability to represent so much more, as the ability to empathize in different areas. Like, the playing experience aspect is huge. It really does help my career because I have been there. I am so lucky that somebody saw me and was like, yes, we'll give you the chance. But there are many people like me that will never be given the opportunity because people up top don't care enough to give those opportunities. And it's not because they're not good enough, I promise you. And that's tough. They'll never have the same audience as the people that have been given positions of power, given platforms for all of these years. And I just hope that changes.
I can only imagine, after hearing this conversation, how many women are going to fight and push their way harder because of your voice.
But mm-hmm. I hope they know that they're needed.
Yes. Jenny, do you have, you know, any ideas to improve diversity and inclusion in sports journalism?
It's executives that care. It's people in powers of hiring processes that care about that. You know, I was speaking to someone the other day that has a hand in finding someone for a certain position. And she was saying she was the only one that mentioned, you know, certain needs in terms of, like, the LGBTQ community should be represented mm-hmm. in this position.
Yes.
When she was saying it, I was like, thank goodness that you have power in this decision, because I bet you no one else thought about that. And it's something that needs to be thought of. And I'm not, like, the end-all be-all answer. Like, I am 2 minorities. I am Chinese and Mexican. But I am still at an advantage over others in that sense, you know? We have people that are also minorities that will not get the opportunity because I look a certain way. I'm still a minority, but I still look a certain way, you know? So it's mm-hmm. it's kind of breaking these traditional stereotypes of, like, what it is to be on television and what you should look like. And I mean, it's a whole process that I wouldn't know how to tackle, or we would have.
No, you're getting maybe there. Even, you are getting there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You are. And I know it's always small. It feels like tiny steps. But the women that we've been speaking to over the weeks have given us incredible amounts of hope, right, Meg? Like, we've just been like,
yes.
every mm-hmm. single time we speak to someone, we're like, wow, it's together. We're going to make this change. So, you know, don't doubt it. It's happening.
Yeah.
But we love those ideas.
I think that one of the things is, like, you can have Hispanic representation, but I am a light-skinned Hispanic. And that is already, you know, I already have a leg up because of that. And that's not fair. Like, that's mm-hmm. not fair. So I recognize that as well. I'm in a position where, although I feel like, you know, I grew up very poor by 2 immigrant parents, I still have more than others do in an opportunity sense here. So
I feel you on that.
Yeah. So it comes down to just anyone that has any sort of privilege. I mean, you mentioned your light skin. That is a privilege, using that privilege in your position to speak up for others who don't have those privileges, that have way less privileges. So that would be my only thing that I think of, that, you know, anyone who is white or anyone who is a man or anyone who is, you know, not a plus size person, like anyone who has those privileges, to use it, to speak up, to lift others' voices. And it sounds like that's what you're doing, which is just incredible. And, you know, you're paving the way for a lot of women. And I think everyone listening right now who has ever questioned if there is a place for them, if there is hope for them, they see it, they hear it, and they know that maybe it may be small right now, but there's that opportunity that is there if we all, gather around together. And, you know, this is like all these women that we're hearing from, like Monica said, the percentages are so small, but their percentages are there, you know, so.
And they grow.
Yeah. And they're growing. That's the thing too. Yeah.
I love it. Yes. So we did just talk about, you know, even spanning into the LGBTQIA plus representation. Meg, you mentioned anyone who is plus size. What are other aspects of the sports journalism industry that you'd like to see addressed, Jenny, or transformed? What changes do you hope to see in the coming years?
Oh, wow. I haven't thought about that. I've felt so upset about the women aspect to start. And then everything from that, there's just so many barriers that I keep facing. But the initial one was like, you know, whenever a broadcast picture team is put out and it's all white males, you're like, what are you doing? So to have to think about all the other things that need to be changed when that one hasn't even been tackled fully is tough. My focus is right now on making sure that the players don't feel like they need to be silenced. They need to fit like a certain narrative perfectly. And for many, that is to be quiet. And that is to not complain about their league, their team, their coach, because that then puts them in problems. I hope that what's happening right now is that the athletes are going to get a voice for themselves. I think that that's where this needs to go. The NWSL players are incredible. These are players that I grew up playing with. They have the same energy, power, passion that I do. They're just not really allowed to use it. And once they do, the world will be shocked.
Don't shush us.
Yes. So for anyone listening that might be interested in pursuing a career in sports journalism, do you have any advice for women who might be thinking about that?
I think the biggest thing I can do is say that I wasn't really trying for this. And every step that I tried to like fit myself into the box of like, this is what a broadcaster needs to be. This is how she stands. This is how she acts. This is how she presents herself to the world. I was met with, hey, if that's what we wanted, we would have hired that. We hired you because you are you and you were very different and you are authentically yourself. So be that, be what we hired for, which is you. And that was at every step of my career here. Like CBS tells me all the time, like, why are you suddenly reporting differently? And I'm like, oh, I thought that that's how you report on national TV. And they were like, no, do you. We hired you because you have a personality. And why did you suddenly feel like you couldn't have one? So That's my message to anybody that's getting into it, is to be you. You know, let's blaze our own lane here. We don't need to fit into this picture perfect little tiny box, because everyone can. You know, if we all tried to do that, we wouldn't be exceptional at our jobs. What has helped me is like just being me throughout this. And I encourage everyone to do it, because you bring different things to the table that if you're just trying to fit into the box, you're just another one in the box.
I love that advice.
It doesn't get any better than that.
Absolutely. Jenny, do you have any upcoming projects that you're excited about and would like to share with our listeners?
I'm on CBS Sports. I cover Champions League, so that'll be all season long. Hopefully, fingers crossed, I get sent to Europe for that in the spring, which was my role last season. And yeah, I do World Cup qualifiers. I mean, that's also like a very long tournament. We have like 3 games a month almost. I cover the USA and Mexico, so follow along. I mean, if you guys are new to soccer, we can talk about it. Follow me on Twitter. I talk about soccer, football interchangeably all the time.
What's your Twitter? Is it just your name?
Jenny Achu.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're about to tweet it out. I like it. Under Armour Sweat the Details. We'll be back after a short break.
Welcome back to Sweat the Details.
All right. All right. I mean, not that the mood wasn't light, but we're about to switch it up real quick, head on a swivel. So this is a segment that we do, Jenny, and we play a game called Kicks from the Mark. So we're going to ask you some questions and you shoot them out as soon as you get them in mind.
I'm scared.
Good with that?
What is it about?
Politics. No, I'm just kidding. Not at all. It's about soccer.
Oh, God. Okay.
You got this. You got this. All right. Ready? Favorite moment in women's soccer?
1999 World Cup.
Bam.
Ooh.
She ready?
Why?
It's like a landmark moment for women's soccer in America. It's like the famous moment when she rips off her shirt.
Mia. And she just...
See, I don't know about soccer, but I know about that moment.
Yeah. See? Boom. Right?
See? Okay. Okay. Awesome. If you could interview anyone, who would it be?
Oh, is it still soccer or just like in life?
Anyone.
I read Becoming recently, and I really, really like would just want to sit and chat with Michelle Obama. I just, it, I feel like she's a human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, is there anyone that is no longer with us that you can think of?
Maradona just passed last year, and he's like a huge monumental figure in our sport, and a very misunderstood figure, apparently. I'd want to chat with him.
I love that. You love to give a voice to the people. I like it. Okay, favorite sport to watch after soccer?
Okay, I think about the Olympics. I always like to watch gymnastics when I watch the Olympics. Oh my
gosh, yes.
Same. Yes.
What about, do you have an event?
I think the beam is cruel. So I just get upset when I watch the beam. I'm mad. I'm like, Agreed. There's no way that you can like force stressed. Them to do this. Yeah, but it's beautiful.
What soccer player should we have our eyes on?
Jude Bellingham plays for Dortmund. And I think he's 18 years old. And I think he's a world beater. He's going to smash it. And he's so young. It's incredible for such a young athlete to be doing such great things on the field.
There's a lot to consider when you're that young, you know, being able to really manage a professional career like that. That's awesome. I'm definitely gonna look him up. Jenny, your energy is so awesome. Thank you for playing our little game.
Have you guys ever been to a soccer match at all?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I haven't.
I actually just saw the Spirit play like a few weeks ago.
Ah.
Oh, cool.
All right, Meg, if you haven't, you tell me where you live and I will make sure we get you into a stadium and you have a great experience.
Yes, I live in Dallas.
There's a player, Ricardo Pepi, from my hometown, El Paso, Texas, who is taking the world by storm. He's on the U.S. men's national team. I will find out how to get you tickets, and you have to promise to go check him out.
I will.
Oh, my gosh. Wait, I'll fly out, Meg.
Yes, can you please? This was a great conversation.
I mean, the energy was just unmatched. Thank you so much, Jenny. I'm very excited to keep up with your Twitter and literally everything you have going on. And you're an absolute ray of sunshine. Like, thank you for bringing life to the sports and the broadcasting, you know, realm.
Thank you. Guys, I really appreciated this conversation.
This was awesome. So great. Thank you so much, Jenny. Hopefully we'll chat again soon.
Hope so. And I'm holding you to that. You're going to a soccer game.
I am. I promise. I will show that on my Instagram. I promise. That was such a great conversation with Jenny. I feel like I'm learning so much from our guests and the phenomenal things that are happening because of women like Jenny, but also recognizing, you know, that women still have so far to go in changing the narrative and stepping into positions to make those changes. Today's conversation was just so freaking inspiring. Mon, what stood out to you?
Jenny Chu is fiery and I'm all about it. Like I'm over here, kicking my feet, ready to hit the field.
Punching, like, let's go.
I'm like, we're going to get it back. 31, this is where I get back in the game. No, but I think the thing that stuck with me truly the most was the consistent concern for diversity in her field and speaking about how it is the responsibility of those from the top, but still being there doing the work from the position that she's in. I mean, I'm forever inspired by that conversation and by Jenny's just her fiery tenacity is just unmatched.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, when she said she set her alarm and she was so excited to see, you know, women journalists, it's just I can't imagine, you know, that moment. I mean, I can't imagine because we've all been there whenever you're really excited for something. And then all of a sudden you see mostly white women and maybe one Latina that was it. And it was just soul crushing to just not see yourself up there, and it just takes away the hope. And you know, I feel like every woman has an experience like that, you know, where you're looking into something that's very exciting for you that you feel like you are passionate about as well, and then seeing that maybe that's not something I can do. Maybe that's just not for me. Maybe it's just a white woman thing or a white male dominated thing. And it's just, you know, disappointing, but it seems like it also lit a fire under her, which I think a lot of women have to go through that moment, which really sucks, but she took it and she ran. And now women are seeing her, you know, and she said, I don't have somebody that I, you know, looked up to because there was nobody like me. And now here she is being that woman for women to look up to and say, she's representing, she's who I want to be like, because I know that it's possible. And it's incredible what she's doing.
Yeah. I mean, and let's not get it twisted. Something that's really important and stands out to me is that when you say that there is a lack of diversity or a lack of inclusion of people of color, women of color, or even one specific race in, or whether it's in media or media or anything, you're not discrediting anyone that is there or discounting their greatness. You're just saying there needs to be more space for others. And I think that a lot of people, women, whoever it is, a lot of people feel that they can't say those things out loud without offending others. And while that may be the case, if we don't say those things out loud and if we don't lead by example, we can't inspire others to start stepping up, and we can't, you know, we can't lead the way for change. So
yes,
I'm here for it. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Jenny Chu. We are, seriously, we're on fire right now.
Oh man. Okay. I think it's time we check in with our goals. Mine have been all over the place the last few weeks, you guys.
I'm excited to hear them.
All right. Well, this is the part of the show we usually like to check in with our fitness goals, our training goals, and just kind of discuss the challenges, the successes, and where we need that help to stay motivated. And for me, I'm kind of in a limbo space right now. You know, I've been doing all the IVF treatment and had a lot of time off. And then the last 48 hours, I did a hardcore workout and I was deadlifting and pretty much getting under some weight for the first time in a month and a half around. And let me tell you, today I can barely walk, but it feels so good because I was able to deadlift 315 after not lifting for 6 weeks. And it just, you saw me, I cried. I literally just started bawling.
I shed a tear for that greatness, Meg. And I was watching you and I was like, oh my goodness. It was so good.
Yeah. Just being surrounded by, you know, all these women, just the power and the encouragement and the support, it just made me feel so loved and supported that I just knew I could do anything in that moment. But, you know, now I'm like, okay, where can I set a new goal? You know, after you get done with something like a setback or a roadblock or an injury, trying to find that new goal to set is kind of a very strange feeling. I'm going to do 5 pounds at a time over the next few weeks and see what happens. But deadlift is my thing. So I'm pumped and I'm ready to get back at it.
I love it. Yeah, I'm still like, I'm sweating. I've been sweating this entire episode, y'all. Because
me too.
That was epic. And that's Under Armour Women for you, though.
Yes.
Like the set is lit every time and we work. So we are here to support you. Yeah, me, you know, we're 5 weeks out from this fight and I'm...
Wow, 5 weeks.
Yeah. And the mixture between fundraising, raising awareness, and then training, I've just really locked into it. I got a few sparring sessions on the books, heading up to New York and Connecticut for some work. And, you know, my goal is we're dropping probably around 3 to 5 pounds for fight day. And my goal is just to outperform myself every single time. And right now it involves, you know, menstruating and sleeping. But in 48 hours, we get that kickback. We're back on the bag and back to work. So that's where I'm at right now. Just continuing to raise the awareness, raise the funds, and raise the performance for this fight with Haymakers. And honestly, while I'm still talking about being a human being and a woman, I've just appreciated everyone's support and feeling seen in that aspect and the shares and listening to these episodes back. I am just so thankful. I'm so thankful to have these energizing conversations every single week. So stay engaged with us, y'all. Continue with the comments. Continue with the DMs. We see every single one of you. And we love you so much. Thank you guys for just rocking with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's it for this week's episode. But don't forget to join us next week when we talk about goals and benchmarks and how we can set ourselves up for success with creating realistic objectives for our training.
Thanks for joining us, Fit Fam. If you liked what you heard on the show, subscribe for free or follow the show on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and review. All 5 stars.
All 5, baby. Until next time, stay inspired, stay motivated, you guys. And please remember to always sweat the details.
Bye. Bye.
If you liked what you heard on the show, subscribe for free or follow the show on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and review.
Sweat the Details is a collaboration with Under Armour and iHeartRadio. Our show is hosted by me, Monica Jones.
And me, Meg Boggs. Our executive producers are Jess Schreibstein, Giselle Lewis-Archbold, Molly Socha, and Maya Cole.
Our producers are Kelly Antol, Layla Kadrain, Emma Osborne, and Alejandra Arevalo.
And our sound editor and engineer is Sarah Gibble-Laska.
Keep up the latest news in women's fitness by following Under Armour at Under Armour Women and at Under Armour.